I want candy, and I want a chocolate croissant, and I want... I have a whole list. Great stuff. Hey, welcome back to the Roundtables live broadcast from the balcony of the Caterina de' Medici restaurant in the beautiful Colavita Center for Italian Food and Wine at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. The smells, the views, and the taste, well, they are all amazing, and we're eager to share them with you this morning. I'm Joe Donahue.
And I'm Alan Chartok, having the best cup of coffee I've ever had in my life. The CIA also has campuses in California, Texas, and Singapore. We come to you from the Hyde Park campus, which sits next to the majestic Hudson River, just 90 minutes north of New York City.
Next year, Singapore. So, this is the only live remote that we do that requires us to have a napkin in our lap. I love it. A cloth, beautiful linen napkin, I should add. Before we begin eating, though, we start things off by welcoming our good friend, Stu Shinsky, who we haven't seen in at least 23 hours. He's the editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal. He was on our turf yesterday. Today, he welcomes us to his neck of the woods for an abbreviated panel discussion to talk about the news of the day and what's up in Po-Town. Good morning. Welcome back, sir.
Welcome to Dutchess County, guys.
It's great to be here. It's great to have you here.
Sorry it's 34 degrees.
Thank God I brought my passport.
Oh, we brought you a parka.
We were surprised when we went through the records and found out that it had been 4 years since we were last doing this broadcast. It just doesn't seem like that.
It's astounding. Longer.
But you've been a part of it since the very beginning, and we thank you for that. So it's always wonderful to have you here. And, of course, as I said, we had you here yesterday. So now you get to tell us what's going on around here.
Well, it's besides being cold, there's actually quite a lot of things going on. And you are sitting here in Hyde Park on the Hudson River. And just north of here, there's a little estate, little museum called the Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library Museum. Mm-hmm. And today on our front page and at PoughkeepsieJournal.com, we have a presentation about a new exhibit that is really pretty interesting. And these are gifts that were given to President Roosevelt. And
did he have a foundation?
There was no political action committees that we know of, but there's a new exhibit opening that showcases gifts given to FDR, and some really cool things up there on display. There's about 100 of them, and the one that caught my eye is he got a model submarine from Charles de Gaulle.
Whoa.
As a gift. And it's not just any submarine. It actually submerged. It does submerge in the water, at least it did back then, and it could fire mini missiles. And this was one of the gifts that President Roosevelt received.
Which is extraordinary, because anybody who reads a lot about Roosevelt knows he despised de Gaulle.
Well, he did love ships.
He did love ships, and certainly part of the Roosevelt legacy was his time on the Hudson River on the ice boats. But some of the other gifts are a little more pedestrian, shall we say, but very interesting. A brass bell from the island of Capri, which was liberated during the war, and it was made of German coins by the residents there. And Stalin gave him a submachine gun, believe it or not.
So from Capri, I'd rather have
the bell?
Yeah, are they really known for? They're known for limoncello.
Oh, that's true.
Yes.
Yeah,
bottle of limoncello.
Good point, Alan.
Yes.
So here's what I always thought when they get these gifts, because, you know, you go on a stage and then somebody hands you a gift, and then you just sort of assume they put it in the garbage can by the time they get to the limo.
Maybe some. I don't know, but there's about 100 on display up there, and I can't
very vouch. Respectful President Roosevelt.
I can't vouch for every gift, Joe.
So but, when you say President Obama, there's some of the gifts he has been given
to?
Yes. So how does that work?
There are a few gifts, I believe, that are on loan to the Roosevelt Library that are on exhibit. Well, this is an exhibit that opens Saturday at the FDR Library and Museum in Hyde Park, which is, of course, a major tourist attraction, and certainly in the news over the last few months with the PBS miniseries on the Roosevelts, which sent traffic and visitation soaring in our region.
It was a wonderful series.
Yes,
wonderful.
Very well done. So that is at PoughkeepsieJournal.com this morning, and that is one of several stories that's happening around here. Some may not be of regional interest, but we do have one on Sunday that is very interesting, and that's all the talk about the casinos in the area.
Yes.
And they were going to, in essence, change the dynamic of the performing arts venues. And what has happened is that a deal has been struck that in essence, will save a lot of the smaller venues, such as the Bardavon Theater in Poughkeepsie, UPAC in Kingston, some others. These smaller venues feared the casinos would steal all the acts.
How big will their theaters be at the casinos? Do we know?
I don't know specifically, but the one that would be closest here would be over in Sullivan County.
Yeah. Right.
But the good news is that what has gone from fear of we're not going to be able to draw anybody to our smaller venues because they'll want to go to the bigger casino theaters, They've cut a deal where they're all working together now to bring these acts in. And there's actually going to be a little revenue sharing from the casinos to these smaller facilities to help them keep going. So this is a good thing that is a very important and vibrant part of our art scene here.
Well, some of these places, the smaller ones, are known as elevator casinos. I don't know if you're aware of that. You get them going up, you get them going down, but you don't get them when they're at the top. And here they'll be getting you'll be getting the best of the best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a... such an important part, just as the culinary is, where we're sitting right now, and just as the Roosevelt Museum is, the presence of the arts in the Hudson Valley, it's not just fun and insightful and something to do. It's a major economic driver. So this is a very substantial local news story.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other stories making news. We're going to talk a little bit about the story that Alan alluded to about Hillary Clinton and the foundation and the Times story and editorial. We'll also talk about Sheldon Silver, that story as well, and a couple of other things. And whatever we can fit into the next 13 minutes, we'll be right back. We are broadcasting live from the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park, New York. We will return after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We are broadcasting live from the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. Stu Shinsky is with us, of course, and it's great to have him here. And he is the editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, and we've been talking about what's been making news. And Alan, so the New York Times wrote an op-ed and has done a fairly major investigation into the Clinton Foundation and looking at the money. Am I right in saying that this is a rather complex story?
Well, it is, and the only question is how much in the way of legs will it have?
Right.
Benghazi didn't work out for the Republicans as they were pushing and pushing and pushing on it, and I think it's what they've got, so they're going to go back for some more, but it didn't really work out for them. And now the Clinton Foundation and the idea that foreign governments would give money to the foundation and that it would go back and forth, and Bill himself would get $500,000 to give a speech somewhere, and is there a quid pro quo, which we hear about all the time. In fact, there are some very prominent New York State politicians facing the bar of justice on those very questions. You know, I don't know about this. It's interesting because I have a very good friend, very good, one of the closest people in the world to me, who is an original Clinton fan, and said to me the other day, I don't know, you know, I might have to vote Republican this time. I don't like the smell of this. Well, if the Clinton fans are beginning to say that, or not at all, it may be dangerous for Hillary.
And it's not just what the outcome is, but it's the perception.
Oh yeah, it's always right.
If it's Benghazi plus it's the email servers, does this all add up?
Well,
even if there is no smoke where there is, or there's no fire when there is smoke.
And still, we know, of course, don't we, that the Republicans gather in council and they say, okay, she's going to be the candidate. We have to assume it, so we have to damage her as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do everything in their power to do it. The question is, will the Clintons cooperate in making that happen?
Well, and also, I just want to read one paragraph here from the Times article, which said, at the heart of the tale are several men, leaders of the Canadian mining industry, who have been major donors to the charitable endeavors of former President Bill Clinton and his family. Members of that group built, financed, and eventually sold off to Russians a company that would become known as Uranium One, and that money would then eventually filtered back to somehow to both the foundation and then paying off Bill Clinton for a speech and so forth. So, like Whitewater, let's go back to that.
Yep.
If you can't explain it in a paragraph,
it's impossible. That you won't make it stick.
Right. I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying, isn't that sort of the way it goes? Because this is a very complex story from what I understand. In fact, in reading the 1,500 words in her, I still don't really understand exactly what happened.
It's a labyrinth. It really is.
And Whitewater never worked out.
Right.
The only thing I can remember from Whitewater, really, is Vince Foster.
Right.
With this poor guy.
Well, that didn't end well. Right, yes. Yeah.
But basically, the complexity, as you say, Joe, really made it impossible.
But I don't know if they're really, if the attackers, quote unquote, if they're looking for people to really fully understand it. I think most people, as Joe says, they're too busy. They're living their lives. They're not necessarily interested in the whole thing. They just are looking to get people to think, oh, that's bad. And create a perception and vote in that way.
Exactly like my friend.
Yeah, yes. And that's, I guess, is what will be the interesting to follow in this story. Let's also talk about, as I bring this up, the Sheldon Silver story that another charge has been added, that seems to be making news as well.
Well, as you know, these things are complicated. Sheldon Silver has two of the best lawyers in the world, at the top of his legal team here. And they've been making all kinds of sounds about the inappropriateness of the charges, want them dismissed. So along come the feds, and they change the texture of the charges, and they split them in half. And they say, okay, we're changing the charges, and here we're making them a little bit more specific. So I think that's what it's all about, Joe.
Right. It's one new charge, I guess. As you said, split each of the three fraud counts that he already faced into two charges. While the superseding indictment adds four new counts, only one is actually based on new accusations that had not already been detailed in the earlier criminal complaint that was filed on February 19th. The new charge, monetary transactions involving crime proceeds, accuses Mr. Silver of transferring more than $287,000 in what the indictment says were the proceeds of his crimes into investments that were not available to the general public.
And superseding indictments are not uncommon. No. As investigations get deeper and more things are clarified, they will be more precise in their charges. But remember these two words, folks. Joe Bruno.
Yeah.
Who went through years and years and years
of hell
and walked.
Yeah.
Whether he did or didn't deserve to walk, he walked. So I think the pressure is on Barrera here and others, Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney. Mm-hmm. If they're going to do this and go to the, they better get it right.
Well, it all depends on what they got.
Right.
And who they got. Mm-hmm. We know they have the Columbia guy, the doctor, who was told to steer, according to the allegation, is told to steer people, mesothelioma patients, to the Silver law firm to get something, back for in terms of state largesse for the institute. So that's, but you got to say it in a microphone. Somebody's got to believe it, and there's got to be somebody on a jury who isn't going to say so what, so what.
And it's the abuse of power. That's the allegation here. This comes down to three words: abuse of power. Was influence peddling going on? Was the position? Was the flow of money based on Silver's role? And I believe the law firm is Weitz and Luxembourg, that Silver was affiliated with many years. And there long have been questions that Mr. Silver was paid these extravagant, or I should say more accurately, big amounts of money for doing what?
Yeah, well, for doing what is right. And some of the scuttlebutt has always been, as long as he was there, you weren't going to see tort reform in New York State.
Yes.
And so far, that sort of turned out, although there are reasons on people's parts not to do tort reform.
And at the basics, is that in and of itself influence peddling?
Well, no, it is that there has to be a quid pro quo, and you have to say it into an FBI microphone.
We'll see if they have it.
Of course, yesterday, as we were wrapping up our program and getting into the debrief yesterday, we learned the news of the president's remarks on two hostages' deaths which ultimately reflected a growing ambivalence about using drones. Mm-hmm. And a look on all the papers this morning, from what I saw of the drone rules, is near certainty enough to strike, and with new technology comes new questions and new ethics and new what ifs.
You know, this is so interesting. You will remember in World War II. No, you guys won't, but I will. I was actually alive. They bombed Dresden. A lot of people died. There was a lot of civilians who went. So is this a war? Are we really having a war with Al-Qaeda? You take a look at the World Trade Center, we're having a war with Al-Qaeda. They're doing really bad things. The American people love the drone stuff because it means to them, and by the way, by huge margins in all the polling, because it means no boots on the ground if you're using if you're using these planes. But remember, what goes up goes down, and if we can use drones, so can other people. And we have seen drones flying over the White House and in recent days. So this technology is very scary.
And I don't. They obviously had no idea that these two gentlemen were being held there. They were not going to send a drone in unless there was some larger, much more worse thought that I prefer not to entertain. They would not have done this if those gentlemen had been known that they were there.
But think of it. Think of the fact that the American legal system prohibits Americans from targeting, assassinating American citizens, even if abroad. Now, the question is, what if the American citizen is a Al-Qaeda operative? And then that's what happens. We have seen examples of that. And then is it? But for something made Obama come out yesterday into the White House and say, "I apologize. I take full responsibility." Kennedy did it in the Bay of Pigs. You know, for what happened. Something motivated that move, and I'm not quite sure what that was.
Well, I hope it was just doing the right thing.
Because, coming out in front of it.
Yeah, just get on the story. And I mentioned yesterday on the air, I was questioning toward the end of the roundtable, why now when this happened a few months ago? And as the day developed yesterday, there was more information that came out about the timing, about the process of investigating the sequence of events. So we hope that the president made this announcement because it was the right thing to do, because he had the information he needed, and the families, the comments from the families were quite... quite obviously, so some anger in there.
Sure.
There's this story's not done.
For more information on the stories that Stu mentioned, you can visit the Poughkeepsie Journal website, which is poughkeepsiejournal.com. Or while we're not reading your letters on the air this morning, we certainly love your comments. It's roundtable at WAMC.org. Better yet, go to WAMC.org/roundtable. While you're at it and you're in this region, hey, pick up a copy of the newspaper.
Or two.
Or two.
Or five.
That's right. Give them to your family and friends. They make lovely gifts. Stu Shinsky, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. I assume you'll be up in our neck of the woods again in a few weeks.
Yes, I will.
I look forward to that. Thank you very much, as always.
Guys, thank you so much. And don't leave here hungry, because if you do, you'd be the first.
We love having you.
Thank you, guys.
We'll take a break. We'll return to the CIA's to the CIA and talk to their Vice President of Academic Affairs. You're listening to the Roundtable's live broadcast from the CIA in Hyde Park on WAMC.